I've entitled this A Christian Perspective on Extraterrestrials and UAPs, which is now the term that they are using instead of UFOs. That's what you'll see in the media. A UAP could either mean an unexplained anomalous phenomenon. That's kind of the technical term, but it's a little easier. Unidentified aerial phenomenon is probably a little easier. So that's what people are talking about now. UAPs, UFO is more the old school term. So why this message now? So this month, a Air Force officer who is still in the Air Force, named David Grush, under the Whistleblower Act, he's a whistleblower. I'll just read this quote here. This month, June 2023, United States Air Force officer and former intelligence officer David Grush publicly claimed that he had been approached by other officials within the U.S. federal government who informed him that the government maintains a highly secretive UFO, also known as UAP, retrieval program and possesses non-human spacecraft and the corpses of non-human pilots. All right, so that was this month. I'm at the Contact in the Desert UFO conference, and the whole conference is buzzing because this whistleblower is going before Congress and he is openly saying that this is what the U.S. government has right now in their possession. So what are his credentials? Well, he was a part of what's called the All Domain Anomaly Resolutions Office, which is called ARRO for short. He's also a member of the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency and he's part of the National Reconnaissance Office. So to summarize, the U.S. government is in possession of a total of 12 crafts that are made by non-human intelligence that either landed or crashed, and non-human bodies, and that this secretive Pentagon program has been working on reverse engineering of the crafts and vehicles over the last 75 years. This came out this month, right? So right before he went before Congress, NASA, trying to get out which is a governmental agency, tried to get out in front of the story with the official narrative. And this was NASA's statement, their first public hearing ever on UAPs. NASA said this a week before David Grush: "I want to emphasize this loud and proud that there is absolutely no convincing evidence for extraterrestrial life associated with UAPs." So the government is coming out and saying, in front of the story, yeah. But of course now, after the last 5 years, we all trust what the government tells us. We know that if the government is saying it, pretty much the opposite of what they're saying is true. So a week after... this is very interesting. A week after, the Pentagon puts out their official statement. Which agency put out the statement? ARRO. The All Domain Anomaly Resolutions Office says, to date, ARRO has not discovered any verifiable information to substantiate claims that any programs regarding the possession or reverse engineering of extraterrestrial materials have existed in the past or exist currently. So sandwiched between the whistleblower's testimony, two government denials that there's anything to this story.
Yeah.
This has never happened before because there's never been a whistleblower. First of all, there's never been a congressional. There have been some governmental studies I'll look into in the next slide, a brief history of UFO phenomena in the last 100 years. Almost 100 years. But anyway, there's never been an active congressional, mandate to listen to evidence, which would also have whistleblower status. Anybody could come forward. This has never happened before where there's been this dynamic, right? So anyway, here is a brief modern history of the modern UFO phenomenon. So notice when it started. So in June 1947 was the first sighting of a flying saucer by a pilot in Washington State by the name of Kenneth Arnold. All right? So this was in June of 1947. Also in the summer of 1947 was the Roswell, New Mexico incident, where there was the claim of people around there is that something crashed and the government took it into their possession. They said initially it was a weather balloon. Later on, their official narrative was that it was a Russian missile of some sort or something related to the Cold War. But anyway, that incident, they believed, I mean, in UFO people believed that they recovered a craft and a body at that point. Now notice, this whistleblower, he is talking about the U.S. government has had secret programs that have recovered craft and bodies starting back in the 1920s is the scope of the 12 crafts that they found. Was this one of the crafts? Anyway, we go on. 1948, the government started Project Sign, which was followed by Project Grudge. These were official government projects, military projects to investigate UFO phenomenon. And that's where we came up with the ETH, the extraterrestrial hypothesis. And it exploded in American culture, the flying saucer. In the 40s and 50s, films started to be produced. Yeah. Americans were fascinated with UFOs. And it was really the origin of the extraterrestrial hypothesis that there's life on other planets that are visiting us and we're seeing their craft. In 1952, the famous government program called Project Blue Book began. It ran from 52 to 69. And that took over from Project Grudge. And there were 12,000 reports that were put together where they were identifying UFO phenomenon. And of those 12,000 reports, 94% of those were classified as identified. They could identify the phenomenon, but 6% of them were considered unidentified. They could not come up with a natural or any other kind of explanation. They're unidentified, where we get unidentified flying objects, right? Anyway, just to continue on. A very famous movie came out in 1970 called The Chariots of the Gods. Some of you might remember that movie, which was really, in some ways, the origin of the ancient alien hypothesis, which I'll get to in a minute. 1976, probably who is considered the father of modern UFO cult, is a guy named Zachariah Sitchin. He's no longer alive. I think he was from the Soviet Union, Jewish background. Anyway, he wrote a book in 1976 called The 12th Planet. And then he went on to write a whole series of books called The Earth Chronicles. And he was the one that popularized the ancient astronaut hypothesis, which was that human origins on this planet is not that we, you know, okay, Darwinian, you know, the Darwinian thing is a life evolved by accident, right? Christian, you know, the Christian, story is that God created us. Well, anyway, the ancient astronaut hypothesis is that somehow alien life came to this planet and seeded life on this planet at some point in our ancient history. And he also had this view that the Anunnaki were a race of extraterrestrials from the planet Nibiru. Why is I'm saying this? Because this is what probably half of the people at the conference that I attended believe. They actually believe that there are Anunnaki that live on another. They're all disciples of Zachariah Sitchin, many of them. Anyway, 1977, Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Many of us remember that movie, Steven Spielberg. I think after Jaws came out in 76, so I think this is his second big movie. George Dreyfus, if you saw the movie, you can still remember. Right, you know. Devil's Tower. Anyway, so that was a popular movie. In the late 1980s, a guy came out named Bob Lazar who worked at Area 51. Anybody heard of Area 51 outside of Las Vegas, right? And he claims that he was a private contracting engineer working on this reverse engineering of spacecraft. But at that time, he was laughed out. You know, he was considered a conspiracy theorist. And nothing like the guy that's just come out and said the same thing, basically. But culture wasn't ready for his hypothesis. But anyway, they laughed at him. The media mocked him. Anyway, anybody watch any of the X-Files? The whole series. It was basically 11 years or whatever it was, 10, 11 years of an entire series on television that was basically saying the same thing. The U.S. government or governments have secret programs, right? Where, the whole thesis is right in that, right? Anyway, in the middle of that, 1997, how many of you remember Contact, the movie with Jodie Foster? So probably one of the world's most famous living ufologists is a guy named Stephen Greer, and his hypothesis is that these are highly evolved beings that live on another planet, they're from another solar system, that they're benevolent, and that we should look to them for help. That's also what a lot of the people at the conference I attended believe, that these things are good, these entities are good, and they're going to help us solve our problems just when we get in all the trouble. And that is the basic thesis of that movie, right? Anyway, another major issue was some U.S. naval pilots off the East Coast videotaped in 2014-15. These videos were released of craft that were outflying whatever the naval pilots were flying. These things were flying much faster, and they have video of it that was released. I don't know if any of you saw that video. Anyway, so to come up to 2023, I was at this conference, and my assessment is that every person at that conference is absolutely convinced that UFOs are real. However, not everybody there was in agreement as to what they are. Some people would say, oh, these are like highly evolved beings from another planet, you know, just like us, but highly evolved. Others would say it's a spiritual dynamic. Some would say it's a mixture of both. Some would say, I don't know, but I think it's real. Many of the people there had abduction experiences. One of the women I talked to, she's a presenter. She remembers one night where she was in the Ozarks, which is very interesting because there's a lot of stuff that links the Ozarks with military intelligence and UFOs. Often these experiments and abductions are around U.S. military bases. So if the U.S. military is involved with some type of situation, it's often that these abduction experiences happen near military bases. Well, she woke up in the morning. She doesn't remember what happened the night before. She was out to dinner and drinking with a friend, and she woke up the next morning. She had stuff that was like coming out of her, like some kind of procedure had been done on her, and she has no recollection of it. She was also, she's a member of MUFON, which is an organization that investigates. Her whole life is just in this because of experiences that she had. Now this is the part where we are getting into understanding maybe the demonic dark side of this. When did the UFO phenomenon really explode and become a thing in the 1940s? Well, this is something that most people, and in fact, I would say if I were to talk to most, I talked to people at the conference that knew about this, but most pastor friends of mine would know nothing about what you're about to hear. So you're lucky that you come to this house church because you're hearing it here first. But in 1946, L. Ron Hubbard, who's the founder of Scientology, anybody know Scientology?
Yes.
Tom Cruise,
yes.
John Travolta, right? Strange modern religion, right? And a guy named John Parsons, better known as the rocket scientist who founded the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. These guys were occultists, okay? They were also, I don't even want to get into the lifestyles, but they were heavily involved in occultism. They were disciples of Aleister Crowley, who established the occult system of Thelema in 1904, and he wrote a book called Moonchild in 1917. He was a disciple of Madame Blavatsky, who was an occultist from the 1800s into the 20th century. Anyway, heavily involved in occult activities, these guys.
Besides basically it, Satanism, devil.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. Luciferian, we'll get into it. In the spring of 1946, Hubbard and Parsons performed a series of magic rituals. And I mention here sex magic because it involved sexual stuff and they were conjuring spirits with the aim of incarnating the Thelemic goddess Babylon in a human woman. Babylon, also known as the Scarlet Woman, the Great Mother, the Mother of Abominations. You're going to see that this is right out of the book of Revelation, right? Everything that the occultists do, the Luciferians do, they take biblical truth and they turn it around. So rather than Lucifer being a fallen entity, an angel, he's now a bearer of light. They worship him. They're Luciferian. Anyway, so Parsons believed that Babylon would incarnate as a messianic figure connected to female emancipation, religious freedom, and sexual liberation. A few years later, Parsons himself proclaimed himself to be the Antichrist and sought to promote a version of witchcraft that venerated Babylon alongside Lucifer. So that's the worldview of these guys. Another guy that was involved in all of this is a guy named Anton LaVey, the founder of the Church of Satan. He was also hanging out with L. Ron Hubbard. And I mean, these guys, occultists, you know, and today, it's all still going on today. It's the spirit cooking that you heard about in Hollywood. They're doing the same type of stuff. They're doing, these guys are all in a line. They're all of, much of Hollywood is involved in these types. They're occultists or Luciferian. Anyway, it's all very interesting. So, the ultimate goal of these operations carried out during February and March 1946 was to give birth to the magical being or the moon child described in Crowley's works. Using the powerful energy of ninth degree sex magic, the rites were intended to open a doorway through which the goddess Babylon might appear in a human form. All right? So in the 1940s, you have high-level occultists that believe that they open some kind of a portal, spiritually, an occult portal. And all of a sudden, what happens in the 1940s? The UFO phenomenon starts to take off. You know what else started in the 1940s?
Hillary Clinton.
Well, yeah. My next slide. My next slide. You're going to want these notes because I'm going to get into this. The Bigfoot phenomenon also exploded in the 1940s, right? So I'm going to read this. You need to listen to it. This is a guy I know. He's a Christian assessment of this whole situation, Tom Horn, and I'm quoting his work. Parsons believed that he and Hubbard accomplished this task in a series of rituals. Parsons' biography preserves a celebratory statement regarding her embodiment in the womb. He believed that Babylon, in the matter of the Immaculate Conception, remember, we have the Immaculate Conception of Jesus, right? They believe that they had an immaculate conception themselves, was due to be born in a woman somewhere on earth in 9 months' time. So 1946, in February and March, they do the ritual, and 9 months later, they're expecting a human female to be born. Babylon to be incarnate upon the earth today, awaiting proper hour for her manifestation. Accordingly, one would expect a female child to be born around 1947, and indeed such an influential feminist was delivered that year, who may offer the most promise for identifying the fruit of Parsons' infamous ritual. That would be none other than Hillary Ronton Clinton. Oh, this is fascinating, guys. Intriguingly, Parsons later referred again to Babylon the Scarlet Woman, and this time by a particular name in his Book of the Antichrist. On October 31st, 1948, a full 69 years ago, when the female child would have only been about 1 year of age, Parsons wrote that her spirit contacted him, calling itself Hilarion, who he said would become an international public figure dedicated to bringing the work of the Antichrist to fruition. Yeah. Why is that important? Because the etymology of Hilarion is the arcane name Hillary. This is, you can't make this stuff up, guys.
She wasn't supposed to.
Anyway, I asked myself, this is Tom Horn. How many internationally influential feminists were born in 1947 who are named Hillary and that have the potential to become the leader or vice president of the most powerful nation on earth, which was dedicated from its inception to the enthronement of Osiris Apollo, and the Bible recognizes as Antichrist, and a spirit calling itself Hillary made clear to Jack Parsons 69 years ago, it was dedicated to helping the rise of the man of sin. Do you know of anybody else that meets these criteria? Nevertheless, all of these questions came to my mind when reading WikiLeaks, email revelations, and remembering how Hillary Clinton had said alien disclosure would be made if she were elected president, and how Abramovich, that's the woman who does the spirit cooking for Hollywood, the Podestas and other close Hillary affiliates were manifest believers in the same UFOs and contiguous aliens that Parsons and Hubbard sought. The Church of Scientology Hubbard started is based on an alien called Xenu. And as well as being practitioners of the same Crowley occultism that Parsons and Hubbard were devotees of, and it immediately seemed to me beyond probability of coincidence. Rather, I straightforward thought in the days leading up to the presidential election that these modern Thelemists, occultists, actually believe Hillary is or could be the incarnation of the archetype divine feminine, the Whore of Babylon, the Hilarion that is set to take the throne of the most powerful nation on earth to assist Antichrist in his bid to rule the entire world. Now that, you're not going to hear that anywhere else in Orange County or anywhere else in a church. This is Tom Horn. He's a Christian guy. He's written many books. I've corresponded with some of his people personally. But this is all his read on the situation. So with that rabbit trail or that, we were deep in the rabbit hole there. Let's read what the book of Revelation says about the Whore of Babylon in Revelation 17. Then one of the seven angels who have the seven bowls came and said to me, come, I will show you the judgment of the great prostitute who is seated on many waters, with whom the kings of the earth have committed sexual immorality, and with the wine of those sexual immorality the dwellers on earth have become drunk. And he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast that was full of blasphemous names, and it had seven heads and ten horns. The woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet and adorned with gold and jewels and pearls, holding in her hand a golden cup full of abominations and the impurities of her sexual immorality. And on her forehead was written a name of mystery, Babylon the Great, mother of prostitutes and of the earth's abominations. And I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints, the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. This is something yet future, what John is seeing. Anyway, so as we are now going to go back into ancient history to kind of frame the modern UFO phenomenon. So you need to know this word, antediluvian. That means anti means before, diluvian means the flood. So what can we say about the history before the flood? All right. What can we say about Satan himself? He was created good. We'll see a scripture in a minute where it says that. He was a cherub. He was a throne guardian in the presence of God, and he fell in the Garden of Eden. That's important. He didn't fall before the creation of the world. He fell in the garden. How do we know that? We'll see that in a minute out of the book of Ezekiel. But Isaiah, speaking of Satan, says, how you are fallen from heaven, O day star, O shining one. This is where the Latin name Lucifer comes in, the light one. This is what it's important that we know this, because many people are Luciferians. They worship Lucifer. They believe that he's good. But the scriptures say, oh, how you have fallen, son of the dawn, how you are cut down to the ground. You are laid, you who laid the nations low. You said in your heart, I will ascend to heaven above the stars of God. Stars of God is always a reference to angels. I will set my throne on high. I will sit and rule on the Mount of Assembly in the far reaches of the north, in the remote parts of Zaphon. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will make myself like the Most High. This is a description of who Lucifer was, who is now fallen. Anyway, sons of God, heavenly beings. You got to understand, in the Old Testament, whenever the term sons of God is used, it's always referring to heavenly beings. In the New Testament, we are now called the sons of God. But we were brought into the family. We were made sons of God. We were sons of Adam, and we were made the sons of God. In the Old Testament, sons of God was only referring to heavenly beings, to angels. Also created in the image of God. That is something that a lot of Christians think, no, mankind is, they're the only ones created in the image of God. That's not true. Angels also were created in the image of God. They have all the same attributes that we do. All of the sons of God bear the image of their Father. They pre-exist us. How do we know that? I'm going to read you Job 37. But it says that the sons of God were there at the creation of the world. And when we were created, they were shouting for joy. They pre-exist us. They look like humans in the Bible. They eat, they drink, they have a physicality. They marry and procreate with human women. Genesis 6, 1 through 4. All right. And I also make mention of the book of Enoch because the book of Enoch talks about this whole narrative that these watchers or these fallen angels, they fell. They were loyal and they fell. Just like Satan fell, they also fell. But they taught mankind things. And this is why it ties into the alien phenomenon. The basic, if you go back into the book of Enoch, they taught mankind advanced technology. What did this whistleblower say that the aliens that they, or whatever, the craft and the bodies that they have, they're working on reverse engineering advanced technology, right? You're going to see this in a minute. So what else did the book of Enoch tell us that these entities taught mankind? Astrology, pharmakia. Pharmakia is also a word for sorcery. It's synonymous. But medical treatments, weaponry, spells of healing, immorality, perversion, homosexuality, bestiality, and some would even say they introduced mankind to the practice of abortion. All of this was taught to mankind by fallen angels. Right? So, let's look at the biblical data that supports the stuff that I just said. Book of Job. God speaking to Job says, "Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Or who stretched the line upon it? Or where were you? Where were its bases sunk? Or who laid its cornerstone? When the morning stars sang together," again, stars in the Bible are always references to, well, I shouldn't say always, but often references to angels, but because they're singing, right? "The morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy." They were there at our creation. They pre-exist us. Ezekiel, this is talking about Satan's fall. Some would say, well, Dave, you said that he fell in the garden. Yeah. Look what Ezekiel says. "You were in Eden, the garden of God. Every precious stone was your covering. Sardius, topaz, and diamond, beryl, onyx, jasper, sapphire, emerald, and carbuncle, I don't even know that, and crafted in gold were your settings and your engravings. On the day that you were created, they were prepared." Satan's created being. "On the day you were created, they were prepared. You were an anointed guardian cherub." The highest angelic entity there is are the throne guardians, the seraphim and the cherubim. Satan was one of them. Do you now know why? I'll get to this later. When it says that the archangel Michael was disputing over the body of Moses, and the archangel Michael would not directly address Satan, but he said, "The Lord rebuke you, Satan," because Satan outranked the archangel Michael. An archangel's below a cherub, right? He wouldn't even directly. So when Christians today are like, "I just talk to Satan and I tell him what to do," it's like, stupid. The archangel Michael would not address him directly. Seriously, there's a lot of foolishness in the church. Where were we given any model from the apostles? Hey, when you pray, start screaming at angels and tell the devil what to do. It's craziness. And people that do that kind of stuff are opening themselves up to serious backlash. Anyway, you were an anointed cherub. I placed you. You were on the holy mountain of God. Eden was believed in the ancient world to be a garden that was on a mountain. Heaven and earth were together. We're going back to where the book of what tree do you find at the very end of the book of Revelation? The tree of life. We started out there and we're ending up there.
Yes.
Right? In the presence of God, right? Anyway, we're going back to Eden. You were on the holy mountain of God in the midst of the stones of fire. You walked. You were blameless in your ways the day you were created till unrighteousness was found in you. Right? So, some Bible teachers today in churches, oh, Satan fell, you know, millions of years before the creation of the world. He's in Eden as an anointed cherub in Eden. So that's just a Christian tradition that this verse or this passage completely undermines. How about Genesis 6? I talked about the sons of God. When man began to multiply in the face of the land and the daughters were born to them, the sons of God saw that the daughters of men were attractive. Now, I already told you that in the Old Testament, sons of God is always referring to angelic beings, never to humans. The first Bible teacher in history to teach that these sons of God were humans was Augustine in the 5th century. Nobody believed that before Augustine came up with this theory that we'll talk about a little bit more later. And I've taught about that before. And they, these sons of God, took as their wives any they chose. The Nephilim, the giants, were on the earth in those days. And also afterward, when the sons of God came into the daughters of men and they bore children to them, the sons of God. The Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intention of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And the Lord regretted that he had made man on earth, and it grieved him to his heart. So the Lord said, I will blot out man, whom I created, from the face of the land, man and animals and creeping things and birds of heaven. Why did I put question marks there? Why is God going to wipe out animals in the flood? What did the watchers teach mankind? Bestiality. Angels crossed species boundaries and cohabitated with human women. And what did mankind do? They were taught things that they went out and did. Why is there all these commandments in the Old Testament? If a man lies with an animal, he should be put to death. Why were these put in the law? Mm. Who would come up with this idea? Right. Where did they get this idea? Mm. It was taught to mankind by perverse angels that crossed species boundaries. And they're like, hey, we're crossing boundaries. We'll teach it to them too. Mm-hmm. Right? For I am sorry that I've made them. Now the earth was corrupt in God's sight. Now the earth was corrupt. All right? And the earth was filled with violence. What else did the watchers teach mankind according to the book of Enoch?
Weaponry.
Warfare. Right? You see the connection. And you're going to see it in the New Testament that supports all this. And God saw the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, and all flesh had corrupted their way on the earth. Now I have here more significant than the fall of man. Do you know that ancient Jews and Christians said that the reason the world is so screwed up is the fall of Adam in the garden when they fell, that broke our relationship with God. But in terms of why the world is so screwed up, all the evil, the perversion, the violence, the immorality, all of it, the ancient church and ancient Jews believed that this explained the evil in the world more than what happened in the book of Genesis chapter 3. But if we grew up in church, the only thing that matters is Adam fell and the world just went off the rails. But you can see here in Genesis chapter 6, something happened, and now the earth was corrupt in God's sight. Not back what happened in... Now, the ball started rolling in Genesis chapter 3. And this took sin to a whole new level. So much so that what was God's response? I'm wiping it all out. Reboot. Anyway, it's important that because if you just believe that these are men and these are women from another part of the ancient Near East, this has no explanation. All right? So let's go on. This is what you need to understand, too, is that if they have alien crafts, this is going to be a challenging thought for a lot of Christians to get their head around. But the Bible does not leave us without explanation. 2 Kings, you know the Elisha's with Elijah, and he's hanging out because Elisha wants an upgrade in his ministry. He wants that double portion. We think we can get it by just going to a conference. Elisha was mentored by Elijah, and he walked around and said, if you're there when I get taken up, you will get my anointing, right? Here is what happened when Elijah went up. And as they went on and talked, behold, chariots. Do you know what that word in Hebrew is? It's the word for vehicles. Vehicles of fire and horses of fire separated the two of them. And Elijah went up by a whirlwind into heaven. And Elisha saw it and he cried, my father, the chariots or the vehicles of Israel and its horsemen. And he saw him no more. All right. This was during the Iron Age. What do you think what we're reading about in the book of 2 Kings is we're looking at an Iron Age person trying to explain what he's just seen. And what he's just seen is vehicles show up to pick up Elijah and take him to another realm.
That's cool.
Was it advanced technology? Was it some type of a craft? And any ancient writing about it would say a chariot showed up. That's how we translate it. And it had horses of fire and it took him away. This would have been an Iron Age trying to describe. Now, we'll get to later. Why do people believe angels have wings? The Bible doesn't teach that. It doesn't say every time an angel shows up, he appears as a man. Anyway, we go on. Matthew 24, 37. All of these verses frame all of this stuff. Jesus said, as in the days of Noah, so shall it be in the coming of the days of the Son of Man. How was it in the days of Noah? We read it right here. This is all the days of Noah. There's something from another realm, a higher entity, the sons of God, come down and they pollute the planet with their technology, their immorality, their violence. They have these hybrid offsprings called the Nephilim or giants that we read about, Goliath later when David slays him. He's a descendant of these. This would have been generation one giants. They've been much bigger, but they were getting smaller as their genome was. But anyway, when Moses was commanded or Joshua was commanded to go into the promised land, they were commanded to kill everything. They were trying to root out the descendants of this pollution that was in the land. Anyway, what did Jesus mean when he said, as in the days of Noah, so shall it be in the coming of the days of the Son of Man? Something else happened in the 1940s in the Middle East. What was that? Oh, yeah. Israel became a nation as well. Israel became a nation in the 1940s. So finally, for the first time since the first century, Jewish people are going to be ruling in Jerusalem, which means they could do what now? They can rebuild a temple. What does the Bible say about the Antichrist? He will enter the temple and he will be worshipped as God. There has been no temple in Jerusalem since it was destroyed in 70 AD. For the first time since 70 AD, the Jews actually are in charge of the land where the temple is. So right now, if they wanted to, the Jews could rebuild the temple. Yes, there would be a bit of a war over this because the Temple Mount is controlled by Arabs, But Muslims. By Muslims, right? They have shrines on top of the Temple Mount. But I'm just saying, are we possibly in the days of Noah? All of this happens in the 1940s. Can you really make this stuff up? It's crazy. Anyway, now, you think that maybe Genesis 6 doesn't refer to angels. Other churches will teach that. And I'll tell you, they're wrong, because we have two New Testament passages that say that those were angels. For God did not spare angels when they sinned, but cast them into the abyss, Tartarus, and committed them to chains of gloomy darkness to be kept until the day of judgment. What was the sin of those angels? Well, we learn in the book of Jude, there's one chapter in the book of Jude. If you're going to memorize a book of the Bible, Jude's your book. Jude 6 and 7, 1, 6 and 7. And the angels did not stay within their position of authority, but left their proper domain or dwelling. He kept in eternal chains under gloomy darkness until the judgment of the great day, just as Sodom and Gomorrah and the surrounding cities, which likewise indulged in sexual immorality and pursued unnatural desire. How can anybody say that these are not references to what Genesis 6 is talking about? These angels did not stay in their proper domain, which was to hang out with angels. They found that human women were attractive. And you're like, that sounds so weird. Why did Paul write in the book, I believe it's 1 Corinthians, he tells a woman to have their head covered? He said, because of the angels. Why would Paul have written to women to cover their heads, their hair, because of the angels? Because in antiquity, the sign of a woman's sexuality was her hair being out. Now today, we let a lot more out. So a woman having her hair out is not really necessarily a sign of her sexuality. But you all throughout human history, conservative women of every culture would cover their hair. It's only been in the last 100 years or so that women have not been covering their hair. You can still go to the Middle East, you'll see Christian women in Egypt or Lebanon, and traditional, usually now the older generation, they still are covering their hair with all the time.
In church.
Well, in church for sure, but outside, I mean, there's villages in Jordan where Christian women still cover their hair. Anyway, out and about. Anyway, but these angels likewise indulged in sexual immorality and pursued unnatural desire. Serve as an example of undergoing a punishment of eternal fire. Now, this is a passage in Revelation that maybe a lot of you have never considered before, but we're going to consider it briefly right now. Revelation 9, 1 through 11. And the fifth angel blew his trumpet. I saw a star fallen from heaven to earth. Remember what stars are? In the Bible, they're referring angels when they're talking about some type of person or whatever. A star fallen from heaven to earth. And how do I know that this is some kind of personality? Because he was given the key to the what? To the shaft of the bottomless pit. Where were these angels that fell put? The book of Enoch tells us they were put into the abyss, the bottomless pit, or in Greek mythology, Tartarus. It's where the Titans are held. Clash of the Titans. All the movies in Hollywood. Remember, Release the Kraken. Right? What's the Kraken? The Kraken is one of these, in Greek mythology, they have the same story. These powerful godlike beings that are held in the abyss, in Tartarus. And of course, you know, Greek mythology has Medusa's head killing the Kraken. You know, anybody saw this stuff? The Clash of the Titans, all that. Those old 70s movies. Anyway, this all comes from the biblical narrative that the Greeks just stole and put into theirs. Anyway, all of the ancient Near East has these same narratives. Anyway, these things are coming out of the abyss in the future. All right? This is why it's important that we understand this stuff. He opened the shaft of the bottomless pit, and from the shaft rose smoke like the smoke of a great furnace, and the sun and the air was darkened in the smoke of the shaft. Then from the smoke came locusts on the earth, and they were given power, like the power of scorpions of the earth. They were told not to harm the grass of the earth or any green plant or any tree, but only those people who do not have the seal of God on their foreheads. They were allowed to torment them for 5 months, but not to kill them. And their torment was like the torment of a scorpion when it stings someone. And in those days, people will seek death and will not find it. They will long to die, but death will flee from them. In appearance, the locusts were like horses prepared for battle. On their heads were what looked like crowns of gold. Their faces were like human faces. Their hair like women's hair. And their teeth like lion's teeth. They had breastplates. The breastplates of iron. This is a first century, this is John describing a vision. What did he see? He's using first century technological language to describe what he's seeing. We, 2,000 years later, we understand technology differently. We would describe this. There are people that look at this passage now and they see this has everything to do with advanced technology and the kind of weapons that are on the planet today. You can just imagine this. If we are looking at this with our modern view, we would describe it differently. Anyway, they had breastplates. The noise of their wings was like the noise of many chariot with horses rushing into battle. They have tails and stings like scorpions, and their power to hurt people for 5 months is in their tails. They have as king over them the angel of the bottomless pit. His name in Hebrew is Abaddon, and in Greek he is called Apollyon. This Apollyon, I believe, is Semaziah, which is the head of the watchers that sinned in Genesis 6. He's been held in the pit for all these years, and they get to come out. They're coming out. That's what Revelation says. They're coming out of the pit. No, this is yet future. All right. So, let's kind of summarize. I have two slides left, and I'll land this plane. Interpreting the biblical data rightly. First of all, demons, unclean spirits, and fallen heavenly beings, sons of God and angels, are not the same thing. This is a very important thing that we have to understand, because a lot of people say demons are fallen angels. That's not true. That is not what the Bible teaches. It's not what the ancients believed. Demons are disembodied spirits. They can inhabit things. We've already seen. What do angels do when they come to the planet? They eat. They drink. They teach technology. They have sexual relations. They have offspring. That's not a disembodied spirit. This is a conflation of two categories. Demons are the disembodied, and angels have a physicality or a corporeality, right? Now, that would tell me that what they have, whatever the U.S. government has in their possession, is it demonic? From the demonic realm, yes. Is it demons? No. They have bodies. Do you see? If Christians think that demons or fallen angels are simply spirits, they're not going to be able to get their head around what's this body thing that they found anyway. What is it? The Nephilim could be killed. Goliath was killed by David. They were killed. The flood killed them. Right? Angels, let's go on. Angels are hierarchical and in different categories. They have different jobs. Actually, the word angel only means messenger, right? We just use that term. I'm using a term that we popularly understand. We say all these heavenly beings are angels. There are seraphim. There are cherubim. There's the captain of the Lord's hosts, or the captain of the Lord's armies. There's archangels. And then there's messenger angels, like the one that showed up at Jesus' tomb after he rose from the dead. Wasn't an archangel. It was a messenger. He had a message. What was his message? He's not here. He's risen. Yeah.
That's funny.
Got to understand this. Many of these different categories of angels, they fell at different times. We only get glimpses. We know when Satan fell. He was a cherub and he fell in the garden. We know that some of them fell in Genesis chapter 6. We know that some of them fell in Genesis chapter 11 and the Tower of Babel and the nations were put under angels and some of those angels fell. That's what Psalm 82 says. I didn't put Psalm 82 out tonight, but it says you were gods, gods with a small g, we'll get to that in a second, but like men you shall die, Psalm 82. What does that mean? They fell. Revelation 12 talks about a third of the stars of heaven falling. That was when the woman who had the virgin woman with child was on the planet. So at some of them fell when Jesus was on the planet. A third of them. That's what it said. That did not happen before time. That was when the virgin was on the planet and gave birth to the male child. That's what Revelation 12 talks about. So we know that there were many falls of these angels. Angels don't have wings. Except the only angels in the Bible that are described as having wings are throne guardians. If you get into the book of Ezekiel or Isaiah, when it describes these angels that are in the presence of God, they have wings, like lots of them, right? But all the other angels that we see that interact with humans, they show up and they appear as humans, right? Remember I told you, angels also were created in the image of God. And it said, I saw that in that Revelation chapter 9. It said these things coming out of the abyss, they had human faces. I mean, how is it that these things came down in Genesis chapter 6? They would have been extremely glorious and obviously handsome because they were able to get wives and marry and have offspring. They didn't look like hideous creatures. Some people want to say, oh, those were reptilians or whatever. Women are not going to get together with reptilians or other alien conceptions, right? You know anything? Anybody in here know anything about the different categories? There's the grays and there's reptilians and then there's the Nordics. And all the women that know anything about angels would say, I sure hope a Nordic comes. Nordics are these tall, blonde, mostly male, some female, but people that have had encounters with these angels, they describe these Nordics as these, you know, Thor-looking kind of guys, whatever. Yeah, exactly. Believe me, I was at a conference where people have encounters. Oh, yeah, I had an encounter with a Nordic. Oh, no, they're channeling all this stuff. Anyway, we'll get to what we, yeah, it's crazy what people, are, and they're welcoming this stuff. Because again, what do they believe about these things? They believe that they're benevolent. And heck, you know. They've got advanced technology. They can solve our problems. Anyway, where did the idea come from that angels have wings? It's not until the year 197, we have a quote from Tertullian, an early church father, and he said this, every spirit possesses wings. This is a common property of both angels and demons. So they are everywhere in a single moment. The whole world is at one place to them. It is easy for them to know everything that is done over the whole world, extent of the world, and to report it. So, if you are a second century, going into the third century Roman, Tertullian lived in North Africa. He spoke Latin. And if something can move from place to place, what must it be able to do? Fly. And what do you know in life that can, what do you know that can fly? Things that have wings. That's your only conception. Yeah, now we have other conceptions. But in the year 200, the only thing that can fly is something with wings. In the year 2023, we have all sorts of things that can fly without wings. We don't just think if something can fly, it must have wings. Rockets don't have wings. They can fly. Helicopters don't have wings. They can fly. Planes have wings, but they're not like the wings of animals, but they can fly. Anyway, we have lots of ideas about what can fly. The other thing is a vehicle. If you're going to describe a vehicle in as an Iron Age person, you're going to say chariot because that's the only thing that you have that's a vehicle that convey a conveyance, something that transport something, and the only way that it can be transported, of course, if you've ever seen, humans can transport, you know, like a rickshaw, whatever, but of course, Ezekiel would have been describing something, I'm sorry, not Ezekiel, Elijah and Elisha, they're thinking, oh, it's horses that are drawing it, because the only thing that could take a vehicle in the Iron Age and move it would have been a beast of burden. But today, when people are seeing something fly around in the sky, they're not saying it's a chariot of the gods or it's a chariot of fire. They're saying it's a flying saucer or it's a UFO. We have different conceptions today. You see, people are describing experiences in the Bible that, and they're using the worldview and the understanding that they have to explain it. So Tertullian is saying all angels have wings. Nobody said this. The Bible doesn't say this. He just is speculating. Nobody else says it. He's the only guy that says this, but somehow every Christmas tree in the world has an angel with wings on the top because of Tertullian, you know? And all of us, you know, we think of, oh, angels, they fly around. But that's not what the Bible says. Anyway, the Bible talks about gods, Elohim, that are not Yahweh as real, okay? Elohim is the plural of the word God in Hebrew. And sometimes Yahweh himself is called Elohim, and sometimes angels are called Elohim. Jesus says, you are all Elohim in the Gospels, and all sorts of people freak out, oh, is Jesus saying we're divine or gods? No. This category word, Elohim, means, it can mean God the Creator when it's used in the right, if it's used in the singular, but when it's used in the plural, it's talking about angelic beings. Angelic beings, all right? This is what we have to understand the Bible rightly, right? We need to understand the book of Enoch, okay? When I witness to New Age people and UFO people, I just talk about the book of Enoch. They love the book of Enoch because they took our book. It's kind of like a community took the rainbow. The rainbow is a sign between God and mankind that he's never going to do what he did in the days of Noah in terms of destroying mankind. And some other community stole our rainbow. Mm-hmm. Do you know that the New Age people stole the book of Enoch? They believe it's a whole book about UFOs and all this stuff. They are the ones that, and the church, I don't listen to the book of Enoch. Early church fathers believed the book of Enoch, some of them to be inspired. The Essenes believed it was inspired. Minimally, it's accurate commentary on what Genesis 6, 1 through 4 is saying. I encourage people to read the book of Enoch. I don't think we have to put it in our Bibles, but it's definitely a whole treatise on explaining what happened. How did these angels come down? What did they do? Why did they get punished? Enoch is I've read it several times now, the book of Enoch. It's so helpful how to witness and share the gospel with UFO people. Anyway, the Sethite view, St. Augustine invented it in the 5th century, will not explain the modern alien phenomenon. Okay? So, what is the Sethite view? The Sethite view is those sons of gods were righteous descendants of Seth, and the daughters of Cain were over here, and this group of men got together with this group of women, and they were just people, and they had relations, and they had this offspring. There's nothing about angels in that story. The only people, the only time that began to be taught was in the 5th century. So the 400s, it began to be taught. And unfortunately, who taught it? All the reformers. So if you've been in a reformed church, you've learned this view. I fight with these Calvinist guys. No, Genesis 6 isn't about that. Do you realize these people have no ability to explain a body thing? Like they have no, they view angels as disembodied spirits in a spiritual sense. If they come up with a body, they're not going to have any explanation for it. But if we have the ancient view, the Jewish view, and the early church view about Genesis 6, we have an explanation for finding a body. Discerning the holy angelic encounters versus a demonic angelic encounter. So, I had a lot of conversations at this conference with people about this. right? So people have had encounters. Even in this room, we've talked about encounters we've had with angels. Those were not encounters that we went looking for. They were encounters that came to us. The initiation of that encounter came from heaven's side. Now, a demonic encounter can also be initiated from outside in an attack, but at the same time, all of these UFO people that I met, they're conjuring. They're trying to make contact. They're trying to open themselves up. They're taking psychedelic drugs like DMT. This will open me up so I can encounter the divine realm. They are doing rituals like those occultists in the 1940s. They were trying to open a portal to connect with a goddess, to have an incarnation of a god come to the planet. Of course, they believe it's all good stuff. They believe it's all good. She's going to liberate mankind, right? Anyway, so we'll do questions at the end. Anyway, so conjuring. This is if you try to open a door, how do you know it's going to come into it? This is what we don't have permission. And so that's one thing. If God wants to initiate something, it's always going to be in line with his word, right? So if an entity shows up and it starts to seduce you and you're a woman, it's not from God. Right? That happens all the time. This is so common, it's unbelievable that it was crazy because people are openly talking about this. And of course, out there, these people that do sex magic, these are rituals to conjure, to literally connect with entities. That's what sex magic is. Mm-hmm. Occult rituals to encounter and have relations with non-human entities. That's what sex magic is, just to give you the definition. So these people are welcoming that. They're looking for it, right? And this stuff is happening, right? Anyway, so that's why we have a gift in the body of Christ called the discerning of spirits, so that we can know, what is this spirit of? Is this a spirit of God? Or is this a spirit that's dark? Because it says that Satan will masquerade as an angel of light. He is the father of lies. He will come and present. So of course, these alien entities, the demonic ones that are coming, are going to come. And they're going to, one, they're going to violate God's law. They teach things about Jesus that are not true, right? There's ways that we can discern. Is this a holy angelic encounter I'm having? Or is it a demonic angelic encounter? I would honestly like to go to one of these UFO conferences and do a seminar on how do you know if contact with an entity is good or bad? Yeah. I could probably sell that seminar. I'll have to see what I can do. Anyway, and the last thing is, we are not Gnostics. So we're not going to interpret everything spiritually. Do you realize that the greatest heresy in the early church that we were fighting against in the second, the end of the first, the second, the third century was Gnosticism? And what did Gnosticism teach? Gnosticism taught that the only thing that matters is spiritual stuff, and that we are spirits. Our bodies don't matter, right? And this kind of thinking crept into the church, right? How did it creep into the church? This is what it crept into the church. When you die, your spirit goes to be with Jesus forever, and you just wander around as a disembodied spirit. That's not what the Bible says. The Bible says that we're going to get a resurrected body that we are going to live with forever. After Jesus rose from the dead, They touched his body. He ate. He was hungry. And he was modeling what kind of body we will have when we are resurrected. We are not disembodied spirits. That comes from Greek philosophy and Gnosticism. Why am I saying this right now? We're not Gnostics because angels are embodied. They're not disembodied. Demons are disembodied. They try to possess things. An angel cannot possess you. A fallen angel cannot possess you. Because if I jump at Natalie right now, am I going to enter into her? No. My embodiment is going to hit her embodiment, and it's going to, you know, I'm probably going to win that one because I outweigh her by about 5 pounds. Ooh. 50 pounds. I was kidding. It's a joke. It was a joke. Anyway, I outweigh, but so this idea, well, Satan possessed me. Satan has an embodiment, right? These entities have embodiment. So what is it that can possess our unclean spirits, demons, not fallen angels? And we have authority to cast demons out of people, right? We were not given a mandate. It says set captives free. Pray into that realm. But this idea that we go around commanding angels and stuff like that, it does say that ultimately at the end of the age, we will judge angels, right? At the end of the age. What does that mean? When they're getting thrown, those fallen angels, when they get thrown into the lake of fire, we're going to be there cheering on Jesus as he does it. Yeah. That is us judging them. You know, don't get that verse like my life verses, I get to judge angels. Yeah. People have crazy ideas about what our mandate is. Our mandate is to preach the gospel and set captives free. And the other angels that God has, their mandate is to fight the fallen angels. They have a mandate. Do you know that all of the language of angels is military? Our God is the Lord of hosts. He is the Lord of heavenly armies. And these armies have weapons. The Bible speaks about their weapons. We saw when those were coming out of the abyss, they had weaponry. I don't know why we just think of that realm as purely spiritual and, oh, it's just ethereal. That's not the biblical picture. That's Greek philosophy and Gnosticism. And this is going to really hurt people because I'll get to the last slide. Why should we care about any of this stuff? So I'm quoting a guy. He's a strong believer, Timothy Alberino. He's written a lot of books. He's written a book called Birthright. It's his most common book. But he says, angels are using technology flying around in advanced aerospace vehicles. This, I have to get my head around this. He showed it to me biblically. These chariots, these vehicles. This is ancient people describing advanced technology. We just think, oh, they just fly around. They just move around in this spiritual sense. We're too Gnostic in our thinking. No, angels are using technology. When they came to the planet in Genesis 6, they taught advanced technology to mankind. Right? And what were the... For conveyance, for transportation. Elijah got into a chariot. The chariots of God or the chariots of Israel were advanced aerospace vehicles in the Iron Age. Chariots with flying horses was their way of describing them in their context and their conception. Today, with modern technology, we don't have to imagine that it's a chariot with a horse. We can imagine that it's a vehicle and advanced technology. We only know about certain types. We know about nuclear power and different types of electric, you know, if you're Elon Musk fan, you know, electric vehicles, whatever. We can conceive of some types of empowerment, but obviously we're not exhausting all the technology. So why else should we care? I believe we have to be prepared that this alien phenomenon will be a big part of the great deception that comes at the end of the age. Imagine people, more than 51% of the American population believes now in extraterrestrial life. More than 51%. And many of those people do not know what the Bible teaches about any of this stuff. So they're going to follow Zachariah Sitchin's view that these are whatever, or somebody else's view. And they're going to be ripe for deception. Disclosure with bodies and crafts would currently lead many Christians to abandon their faith. This is absolutely true. Because if you ask Christians, what do you think UFOs are? It's all demonic. Great. What do you mean all demonic? It's not real. You see where the problem is? It's not real. It's all just smoke and mirrors. Yes, people think they've seen something or they've encountered something, but it's actually purely spiritual. This is Gnosticism, and it's unreal. It's ethereal. What are those people going to do when they're looking at an entity, a body, or a craft that's non-human? How are they going to get their head around it? You know what it's going to lead to? It's going to lead to many people that say, obviously, my worldview can't explain this phenomena, and they're going to abandon the faith. Transhumanism.
Yes.
Artificial intelligence. Occultism, all mixed together. Transhumanism, the movement of transhumanism is we want to move beyond our humanity to something that is, we want to transfer from our humanity to something else. They are trying to take us beyond our humanity.
Yes.
Why would this be of interest from a Christian perspective? Because Jesus came to save humans who are the sons of Adam. If you're no longer a son of Adam,
right,
you're no longer savable.
Right.
Do you know why the Nephilim of the giants, they weren't human and they weren't angelic. They were hybrids. And when they died, their spirits just roam around looking for things to inhabit. They can't go up. They can't go down. They have no place to go. Right? They weren't human and they weren't angelic. So, the transhumanist movement, imagine what's going on. They're messing with the human genome, changing people's DNA, and technology is mixed in with the occult. There's rituals going on where, if the U.S. government, for example, has been in contact with or whatever, with advanced civilizations, what technology did they get from it? Because scientists, there was a senator or a congressman in the 1950s, and when they were looking at this phenomenon back then, he was a strong believer. He said, don't mess with this stuff, guys. This is demonic. You're opening doors. That was his word in the 1950s. He said, stop messing around with this stuff. Anyway, I believe that the transhumanist movement, the artificial intelligence, the occultism, which is exploding today, far more. You know, back in the 1940s, to be an occultist, to be in this stuff, it was hush-hush, back secret, whatever. Now people are openly involved in the occult. I mean, you can go online and just type in spirit cooking with Abramovich, this woman, and you have Hollywood celebrities,
yes,
actors and actresses that we all like, and congressmen and people from both sides of the aisle that are involved in these occult rituals.
That's
correct. It's sad because a lot of actors I like, you know, Will Ferrell is in these events. It's terrible that these, and I'm sure some people go because it seems interesting and they're just open-minded, but they don't know what they're playing with. God help the Christians that are in Hollywood and in politics that are warning people about these rituals that they think are so harmless. Anyway, the New Age spirituality is all over this stuff. You know, I was at this UFO conference and I felt like I was at a New Age mystic conference. Rituals were going on at tables. People's auras were being read. People were being taken into seances. And I'm walking around all this stuff. I was filming it and taking pictures and sending it to Natalie. And then she gets like some kind of a visitation that night or something happened that night? Remember you had a disturbing sleep? I'm like, I better delete all those photos I sent you. Who knows what I sent her? I'm just like, Lord, I forgive me. You know, I'm like, you know, these people are having... I mean, they were having, in a demonic way, they were having encounters at this conference. You know, the same experience that Carla and I had last week worshiping Yahweh. He encountered us. These people were doing their rituals to encounter something else at this conference. I'll tell you, we need to understand this stuff because how are we going to speak in to people that are being influenced by this? Most pastors know nothing about the transhumanist movement. They know nothing about artificial intelligence and where it's at. They're not at all aware of what's going on with the occult, and they're very unprepared for the New Age. How are they equipping the saints to be lights in this world right now?
That's right.
Seriously. And I feel like Why was I never taught any of this stuff? I've studied in 4 seminaries, and I didn't learn any of this stuff in any of those seminaries. What are our cemeteries teaching people?
Cemeteries?
Yeah, that's what I call them. What are, you know, they don't even teach you to read the Bible the way that I've taught us tonight to read the Bible. I'll send you these notes. You go back. You see if I'm not onto something here. Look at vehicles. Look at chariots in the Bible. You go, oh my goodness. They have crafts all over the Bible. And why are we thinking it's just purely spiritual? Because we're descendants of Greek philosophy. You die and your soul goes to heaven. It's not what the Bible teaches. The dead in Christ will rise first. What? What do you mean the dead in Christ will rise first? You know, after the resurrection of Jesus, just to give a little foretaste, Yahweh raised 500 people from the dead in Jerusalem. At the resurrection of Jesus, just so they couldn't say it was one phantom Jesus walking around, 500 grandmas, grandpas, great-grandfathers risen from the dead. That's what Matthew, it's 25, I believe, is the reference. It says that 500 people raised from the dead and were walking around Jerusalem just to prove that we get our bodies back. Just to prove that Gnosticism and Greek philosophy are wrong, that we're not just disembodied spirits floating around forever. Right? What did Jesus say we're going to do in the new kingdom with him? We're going to eat and drink. Not if we're disembodied spirits. Now, what would that be? That's like the drinking that goes on in the haunted mansion, you know? You're seeing that view, right? The Bible, rightly understood, explains all of the phenomena that is out there in the culture. The UFOs, the aliens, the abductions. I believe that an abduction, these abduction experiences are real. If there are craft that can take people to other places, could somebody not be abducted? You see, you got to get out of your mind. Is it possible that a demon or a demonic entity could come and just deceive you into having an experience where you weren't abducted? Yes. But it's also true that you could be abducted and mistreated. All of the people that have alien abduction experiences have a very similar narrative. It always has to do with scientific or medical experiments on them and sexual stuff. And it's frightening and painful. And I also wanted to teach this at the UFO conference. The only thing that they have discovered that can stop an alien abduction experience from happening once it starts to be initiated is to call on the name of Jesus.
Yes.
It is the only thing that they've found that will stop it once it's starting. Wow. Why would that not be a conference? You know, why would that not be like the number one thing? No, the number one thing at the conference was people going to learn how to take DMT, which is 100 times more powerful than LSD or acid, and how to open up your spirit so that you can contact entities. That was the number one thesis at the conference. It was horrifying. How about next year we go back there and we have one, how to stop an alien abduction when it's taking place. But I'm telling you, biblically, Bigfoot, sleep paralysis, the incubus, succubus, we just go on and on and on. Every paranormal thing that's out there, the Bible addresses. And not just like, oh, it's just all demonic and it's just this simple thing. No. Incubus and succubus experiences are exactly what happened in Genesis chapter 6. Ghosts. What are disembodied spirits? You think, it's grandma. Oh, you don't think these things can get a few bits of intel on your grandmother? Right. And come and convince you that you're talking to grandma or great grandma or whoever? People are, you know,